XYZ ballot breakdown.
Ballot breakdown.
Broomhead breaks down who and what are on your ballot. AZ ballot breakdown.
All right, once again, every day, 10:05, we're going to talk about something to do with the election. We're sticking with the presidential election today. It's been a big theme. We're going to do the local stuff, too, the Senate races. And matter of fact, we may dive into it. If you're looking at Emerson College polls, the Senate race is narrowing. Kari Lake is gaining on Ruben Gallego. Ruben Gallego is holding steady in his approval rating and people voting for him. But Kari Lake is gaining ground, at least in the Emerson College poll. She's now within 2 points. We may get into that in a few moments. But President Trump, former President Trump, is making a campaign stop. And I think it's significant enough to talk about because the former president is to make a highly unusual campaign stop. I'm reading this from a story on the Daily Caller. And he's going to address the Libertarian Party at their national convention. The Libertarian Party announced Wednesday that Trump will join the convention lineup, adding that it is the first time that a former president would be given an address to its party members, candidates, and executive committee. Interesting. Attendees registered to attend the convention will be able to cast their vote to decide which topics the former president will address, according to a press release. The reason why I think this is significant is I've mentioned many, many times, Arizona is not an anomaly with the growing number of voters that are party non-declared. There are a number of voters out there that I was just asked in a group setting. I was spoke with Mike Noble, you know, from Noble Predictive Insights. Him and I were asked to be the guest at this organization. It was a fun night. It really was a great night. And I was honored to be asked to be there. These were business executives. These were really very successful people that come together in a community service aspect of things. But the dinner was just kind of question and answer. And they used the phrase, and it was a great question. One of the women in the crowd asked the question about the movable middle is what she said. How do they get the movable middle? And I thought that's a great way of putting it. People that are not hard one way or the other way politically, but they lean one way or another on issues. I have a lot of friends that define themselves. They'll say, I am liberal, or I am socially moderate, but I'm fiscally conservative. And I would say to you, I've said many times that I am a very fiscally conservative person, but I find myself as I get older becoming more socially libertarian, and that there are a lot of things that are just none of the government's business. So those descriptors, the movable middle is what she called them. And I said then that I think both parties have lost touch a little bit. Not necessarily elected officials all the time, but they answer to the party. What they do is they speak to their base, and they speak to their base, and they speak to their base. And there are a lot of people out there that are not. They don't understand the lingo. It's not about, I don't want to hear you bash the other side, that everybody on the left, Democrats are horrible people, or Republicans are horrible people. After a while, it just gets boring. I'll tell you, if you didn't hear the interview on the afternoon show on Outspoken, they had Bill Maher on because Bill Maher was in town. And one of the things that is compelling about Bill Maher, and I've always thought he was a brilliant guy. I didn't agree with him. He's an atheist, a self-affirmed atheist. He did that movie called Religulous. And, you know, as a person of faith, I didn't agree with it. But the guy's a brilliant guy. One of the things he's done is he goes after both sides. He understands that the extremes in both parties are just ripe to be made fun of sometimes, and some of the things they say and do. And I think that that movable middle, as they call themselves, is looking for a home, and they're looking for someone that acknowledges we may not agree on everything, but here I think are the key issues where we should agree. And I think if you do that, you're going to be able to say, and I think for a Republican candidate to say to the Libertarians, we don't agree on everything, but let me tell you where I think we do agree. First Amendment, Second Amendment, and a lot of these other issues. And I think we agree on them. And so when you make a choice, you're going to need to make a choice on who's best to run this country. And this is why I think you need to vote for me, because your option is not this. If your option doesn't agree with you on any of these things. So I've said before, when it comes to, in this case, it's libertarians, but I've used the phrase party non-declared. It's independent voters. I'm not knocking libertarians. He's speaking to them, but he's going outside of his base. He is intentionally going away from the Republican voters and Republican to Trump rallies. You know, when you have a Trump rally, there are going to be a handful of people that aren't necessarily supporters that want to hear what you have to say. But for the most part, it's a church service. As a matter of fact, it's exactly like a church service on a Sunday morning. When you, if you're the pastor of a church, and I've spoken to church groups before, not as a pastor, but I actually have done that once, speaking to a church group, you know who the audience is, especially whatever the denomination is. If you're LDS, if you're Catholic, if you're Baptist, it doesn't matter. Non-denominational, it doesn't matter. When you walk through the doors, you have an expectation of what you're going to get. The pastor knows what the congregants are there for, and the congregants know what the sermon is basically going to be. But there will be a few people in the crowd that are not necessarily believers, and they are going to be there to politely listen. You can't cater the message in that room to the non-believers. You have to cater to the crowd. And that's why I say when the president, the former president, is going to go outside of the Trump rally, that he is going to speak to a group of people that are, he knows, are not believers. He's going into a strange place. The party that does that, the party that acknowledges my base is going to follow me, and I'm going to keep using church terms, the party that goes out as missionaries, the party that goes out and says, we understand you're not a believer in our message, but please hear me out. Because you're trying to win their vote. You're trying to say to them, we are closer than you believe we are. We agree more than you believe we agree. Let me drop all of the political speak of my party for a moment, and let me tell you where I think you would agree with me. And I think the candidate, the party that does that the best, is going to win many of the elections. We have so many party non-declared, people that haven't decided, people that say they don't like either candidate. There is a lot of movement to be had out there. Going back for just a moment to the Senate race, as I was talking about it, when you look at the Senate race, everybody, the person with name ID statewide in the race is Carrie Lake. She was certainly in Maricopa County. She's been known for 27 years as a news anchor. She was a household name for a long time. She built a statewide name for herself during the gubernatorial candidacy a couple of years ago. But so people know what they're getting with her. And Ruben Gallego was doing a very good job, still is doing a very good job of identifying himself with people around the state. The TV commercials, I'm a Marine, I'm a combat veteran, I understand sacrifice, I understand loss, raised by a single mom. The messaging is stellar. I think Gallego's message is stellar. What is happening somehow, and I don't know what the reasons are, those people that have been undecided, Ruben Gallego is standing very firm with his base. They like him. They are continuing to vote for him. He is not losing ground. But Carrie Lake is gaining ground. So she is picking up people now as they hear her speak. They're saying, oh, okay, whatever she's doing is working, and she's starting to close that gap. According to Emerson College, it's only a 2-point gap. When people leave the rooms that they're used to being in and they go out and say, I know you're not very, you don't know me very well, but hear me out. People tend to listen, and it's starting to work. We'll see if it works if both parties jump on board. In a moment, the majority of Americans over the age of 50 worry that they don't have enough to retire. We'll talk about how serious that is coming up in just one moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
right. This morning we had Kristen Bentz on with us. Kristen is a frequent fill-in host here at KTAR News. I've known Kristen for years, and she's an expert as a retail analyst. And what a retail analyst does, exactly like it sounds, she advises Wall Street investors on the direction that the retail world is going and what it means. You know that the experts in this area are predicting things way out before you and I do. If you see a stock you want to buy, if you think something's going in a direction, the experts saw it 6 months ago. That's the way they work. So when it comes to the economy, we look at numbers, we read the same stories you read, but I wanted to know what they mean. So the Yum brands, which is KFC, Taco Bell, and Pizza Hut, major, you know, family restaurants, drive-through, usually cheap and easy, they didn't meet their revenue goals, and a lot of people were surprised by that. But is this an indicator that even working class families that rely on those to feed their families, not every day of the week, but an inexpensive way to feed your kids a couple of times a week or whatever, or maybe yourself, what does it mean? And so here's briefly what Kristen had to say about that.
Yum brands. For those that, you know, don't follow the market, that's Taco Bell, that's Pizza Hut, and that's KFC. So that used to be kind of, you know, low-income consumers where they're going to, like, feed their family. If you're a teen, you're probably door dashing. My kids love to do that, too.
So this is part of the issue, but one of the stories is it's others as well. Majority of Americans over the age of 50 worry they won't have enough money for retirement, according to a study. The AARP did a survey and found that 61% of the people they surveyed, Americans over the age of 50, worried they won't have enough money for retirement. Only 21% of people have a retirement plan. The Financial Security Trends survey released in January included interviews with more than 8,300 Americans across 30 states, over 30 across every state. I'm sorry. So of the survey findings, that 61% of those 50 and over are worried they won't have enough to retire. And I think a lot of that, and this was before what we've seen happen in the last couple of months, where the people are talking about stagflation, whether it's going to happen or not, we don't know. But what is fascinating about it is that more and more people in the last couple of years, when we saw the huge spike in inflation, there were many people that had to go back to work because you set yourself for retirement, figuring, hey, listen, there is inflation. By the time I'm ready to retire, I want my retirement account to grow a lot faster than inflation is growing. I'll have this money when I'm ready to start drawing on this with my Social Security. I'm going to draw on these things. I'm going to have the money I need to live. This is my budget. I can live within that budget. That's what people say and do. We all know that to be true. What is fascinating about this part of it is so many people went back to work because the money they had saved wasn't sufficient. And so now you look at people being worried that are in their 50s. Now, I'm one of those people in my 50s saying, all right, what does that look like? First of all, when do I want to retire? I love what I do. I love where I do it. I love what I do. I'm not looking for a way out. I'm not looking to do that. There are many people. You know, my brother loves being a cop. My brother's been a cop for 25 years. His wife has been a cop longer than he has, a year or so. But, you know, my brother's like, you know, looking at life and saying, I got 25 years in. What am I going to do? How long am I going to stay a cop? All of us at some point, and he's 7 years younger than me, start thinking about, okay, at some point, I've got to think about what's next. I realize at 57 years old, they're not going to keep me around here forever, that there's going to be a time where time runs out for everybody. It doesn't matter who you are. And what's next? Is there something that's next? And at what point, at what age, are you able to say, I'm going to dictate what's next? I want to choose what's next. I have an income that's sufficient. I can live my life. I can make a living. And now I can go out and do something because I want to. I don't think I'm ever going to be the person that sits home and just kind of sits back. But I would love to be able to choose my day to day. That to me would be a dream if I could choose my day to day. And so how many people now are worried that they're not going to be able to retire? That's a big concern. And what that also means, I want to talk about younger people. As the progression goes, you start at an entry level position, you take a promotion, or maybe another company hires you for a promotion. So you take your promotion by working at another company and you work your way up, whether it's the corporate ladder or whatever you want to call it. You work your way up in your industry, and then eventually you age out, you're ready to go, time to retire, and the next generation takes over your spot and everybody moves up a notch. if you're going to clog up the upper end of the wage department, or if you've got older people competing with younger people for jobs, that's a problem in the job market long term. And so it's something to keep an eye on. The inflation part of this, the stagnated growth, are we going to see stagflation? It's a good question. It is a really, really good question. In a moment, we are going to talk about the police department. The Phoenix City Council recently has decided that they're on a civilian review board with a couple of restrictions and clarifications. We'll talk about why this is a good or a bad idea. Is police oversight necessary? Another level of oversight? And we'll talk about that next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, speaking of pressure, your last chance to win tickets to see the Rolling Stones at State Farm Stadium May 7th. Head over to the contest page at KTAR.com for more details. I just watched a video of an interview because you know that Billy Joel's been on a bunch with Howard Stern. They're pretty good friends. I was watching a video recently of him making fun of Billy Joel, making fun of the song Piano Man, which I thought was hilarious because of all of the Billy Joel songs, that's the one I like the least. It plays everywhere. And it was really funny to see him kind of make fun of the song. It was great. If you get a chance to check it out, it's funny. The city of Phoenix has improved the creation of a police oversight board, which certain residents can't be a part of. That's one of the headlines. Matter of fact, that's the headline from 12 News. But they also are changing the Office of Accountability and Transparency. The proposed city code also eliminates OAT's authority to conduct or participate in investigations and recommend disciplinary actions for officers, a response to the change in a state law back in 2022 when Governor Ducey approved this to curtail local police oversight. So the Mayor Kate Gallego, said at a meeting in March that the civilian review board would modernize and strengthen the police department and add another layer of community conversation and accountability and hopefully increase trust. She also added that the city plans to nix OAT's investigative authority and was not wanted or expected. So let's talk about this, because when 12 News says that there are people that are not allowed to be on this, there was an amendment that said if you've ever filed legal claims against the Phoenix Police Department, you're not eligible to serve on a civilian review board. And I found that interesting because when you talk about OAT, or the Office of Accountability and Transparency, if you go back at the creation of that during kind of the height of the defund the police movement. And that's what OAT was in response to. Other cities around the country doing these things to pacify the people that are never going to be pacified. If there are people, myself, in, I will tell you, I'm the opposite side of the coin. When I hear a story, I side with the cop. I give the police the benefit of the doubt. I am unapologetically pro-law enforcement, but I'm also not dumb. Let me give you an example. Recently, there was a Phoenix police officer who was arrested, 16-year veteran. Cop was arrested on charges of involvement with child pornography, receiving or sending or whatever pictures, inappropriate pictures of children engaged in pornography. Disgusting, despicable. And so I reached out to people that I knew in PD, and every single cop that I knew said, disgusting, gotta go, should leave tomorrow, should have been gone today, never, no room for any of this. Whether they knew this cop or not, didn't matter, 16 years on, doesn't matter anything he'd ever done in the police department, gotta go, get him out, don't want him around. That's what I see with police officers. There is a high standard. There have been a lot of cops where someone's on that job that is a good person, but is just not meant to be a cop. It's like being a teacher. It's like being a paramedic or a nurse. I have a friend. I have a couple of friends that are nurses, and I think the world of them. I can't imagine ever doing that job. I cannot imagine ever doing that job. It is a thankless job for me, not a job I'd be interested in. But if you're called to be a nurse, man, it's what you're made to do. The idea of police oversight is necessary. PSB, Professional Standards Bureaus, Internal Affairs, whatever you want to call it, PSB is a necessary part of policing. It makes sure and holds cops to the highest standard. But there are times when a lot of this oversight, in my opinion, goes too far. Once again, I'll go back to the teacher analogy. I gave it earlier today. We had another instance, now a couple of them in Peoria, where coaches and teachers have been involved in inappropriate relationships with students. Most recently, someone very well known to Suns fans, he had been connected to the Suns for a long time, basketball coach, wasn't a teacher, but taught at the high school, and then it was being covered up by, not covered up, a heads up was given to him by a teacher that said, hey, the cops are looking for you. So the teacher's in trouble, too. Nobody is talking about a civilian review board in these situations or a different kind or more oversight. And, you know, and there have been complaints. There have been times when teachers have been caught or been accused, and there's been a lot of evidence, and they leave the job before their charges against them, or they've been dismissed without criminal charges, but they're inappropriate things that have been done by teachers, and then they get hired in another district. And nobody is saying, well, that nobody should be doing that. We need an oversight, and we need, no, you understand that no matter how hard you try, there are background checks for teachers. You do all of these things to ensure that you're hiring good people. You know that bad people are going to slip through the cracks, or somebody that might have been good before is going to do something bad while on the job. But nobody is saying that entire district, that entire school, that superintendent, that school board, they all need to be fired, or we need more of this, or we need more of that. But here we have policing once again. PSB is called into question. The county attorney's office is called into question. Sure, you're just lying for bad cops. Cops just cover for other cops. And it doesn't matter how much anecdotal evidence you give people, you're not going to pull some people off that point of view. I know my brother is the best human being I know, and so is my sister-in-law. My brother's been a cop for 25 years. He's a captain. There's nobody that hates a bad cop more than a good cop. No one. You can say it until you're blue in the face, and there are some people that just don't believe it. So if people file a claim against the city and they say now they can't serve on this board because there may be a bias, even an unintended bias, and others are pushing back and saying, no, that's not right, because you're closing out a perspective. The Office of Accountability and Transparency doesn't allow people on that board if you've ever worked in law enforcement or been an immediate family member of law enforcement. Why? They didn't want that bias. That's the part of this that's so frustrating. So one bias was required to create the Office of Accountability and Transparency and its independence. That bias was okay, but now this bias is wrong. We just have all of this oversight, and it keeps sending a message that we are going to cater to the people in our society that will never be satisfied. So PSB is going to, let's say in a scenario, PSB says, nothing was done here. These cops acted within policy. And then the county attorney's office will do their investigation, and they're going to say, there is no criminal act here. There's no criminality in any of this. Everything is good to go. Then the Office of Accountability weighs in. Then you've got a civilian review board that weighs in. Everybody else is going to have, and if one of those groups, one of those other two, says something is wrong, a segment of our society is going to believe it. It's just not the right way to do business. And you're not going to convince me otherwise. In a moment, police move in and disband protests on college campuses around the country, including Arizona State. But protesters gathering again. We'll get to that coming up here in just one moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
We talked about this morning, and it's hard to take some people seriously, although they're taking themselves very, very seriously. Yesterday, we played audio of a PhD candidate at Columbia University, an Ivy League school. Getting into an Ivy League school is supposed to be something that is guaranteed that you are one of the smartest people on the planet to get into an Ivy League school. To be a PhD candidate, you're a genius. You are genius level. It is, to me, a joke when you heard this young woman talk about wanting humanitarian aid for the people barricaded in the buildings. First of all, they'd been there for 2.5 hours. They hadn't even been there long enough to need to use the bathroom, and they needed food and water. But it was really strange. But then with the other part of the strangeness is at Columbia University, a professional agitator, this woman trains people on how to protest. There's video of this old woman with these students, and I shouldn't say students, with younger people. Some of them students, some of them have no connection to Columbia University. And she's showing them how to zip tie tables to doors and effectively barricade themselves into the building. Cameras over here, do this over there, stay away from the windows, zip tie that table to that door handle. This woman considers herself an expert and then rents herself out as a professional agitator. What does she have to do with students at Columbia University in a protest? When I was watching early this morning at UCLA, about 4 o'clock in the morning, California Highway Patrol and others moved in to break up a tent city that had been built because the university didn't move in and stop it before it took hold. And the things they found on the ground, 4x8 sheets of plywood that had handles. What somebody had done was screwed, it looked like cupboard handles onto it so that they could be used as shields. They were using pallets as shields. They were setting up for a confrontation. And they were saying, we're not afraid. But then they were arrested. And then looking at some of the people that were arrested, these were people that looked to be in their 40s and 50s. So who's influencing the young people on college campuses? Where is this coming from? Is something I think we're going to wrestle with for a long time. I think for quite a long time. I want you to hear Jim Ryan over at ABC talking about the non-students that have been arrested on that campus.
Austin police say they've caught demonstrators with rocks, clubs, chains, and guns. But Maria Warren Hernandez, who was arrested Monday, says,
I haven't seen anything that resembled violence. It's always been about peacefully protesting and making a point.
She acknowledges that she is not a student at UT. University administrators say that of the 79 people arrested Monday, 45 had no campus affiliation.
Yeah, and at Arizona State University, 72 people arrested, 67, no affiliation with it. Now, people have begun to gather again at Arizona State University. ASU nipped it in the bud immediately, and it was nothing like UCLA. UCLA, for days and days and days, they kept the police away. The chancellor and the other administrative leaders at UCLA wouldn't let the police intervene until they had been dug in and fortified to where the clashes happened this morning. But then you saw people. I want you to listen to this. This is Trevor Ault, ABC, about what happened at UCLA.
All the officers are facing out because they don't want any more demonstrators to make their way in. We saw several hours of violent clashes. There were points where some pro-Israeli demonstrators surrounded some portions of the encampment. There were multiple instances where fireworks were tossed into the encampment overnight. And we saw people on both sides using plywood boards, using batons to attack one another, to the point that UCLA officials referred to this as horrific violence.
So what are the answers? First Amendment, listen to me talk about people's right. I even defend people I disagree with and their right to speak. This is not about free speech. This is crazy. This is violence. But the other part of this, when you see on American college campuses the Palestinian flag, when you see at least in one occasion where the American flag was lowered and in its place, they raised the Palestinian flag. When you see members of fraternities protecting the American flags on campuses, what do you think is happening in Gaza? We know that the Israelis are preparing for a final push in Rafah to get rid of and to finally decimate to where they can't have power anymore, Hamas. We know that Iran doesn't want it. As a matter of fact, the Iranian government, they're saying that their universities, at least one of their universities, is going to offer scholarships to any students in America that are expelled because of their behavior. This is about propaganda. Hamas sees this. Palestinians see this. The family members of hostages that are being held by Hamas see this. Why would Hamas not hold out? Not only was there a ceasefire agreement being offered, the most recent one was the Israelis once again lowering their expectations and their demands in an attempt to get Hamas to agree to a ceasefire, even though they are continuing to hold those hostages and the Israelis desperately want those hostages released. So again, these self-serving, idiotic young people who are so myopic and, well, I would say blind, not even myopic, blind to the truth, don't even realize the propaganda that they're giving. When you've got Stanford University and students, at least one, wearing a Hamas headband, when you've got the Palestinian flag flying, you're emboldening these terrorists. It's what you're doing. You are emboldening the terrorists and you're prolonging the holding of these hostages. You may have noble intent, but you are ignorant as to the fact and the plight of the Israeli people. And this is a horrible way to do it. Even if you are on the side of angels, you are doing it absolutely, unequivocally. You are doing it the wrong way. And the self-indulgent at UCLA, they demanded vegan meals. Is there anything more entitled? Not only are we telling you, one of our demands is send us food. We want vegan meals. Vegetarian, vegan, and gluten-free meals are our demands. The most entitled people on the entire planet. We're going to go back to the topic of abortion coming up. The Senate President Warren Peterson joined us. A little bit of what he had to say about that is coming up here. We'll talk about that next.
Life's better with American Family Insurance. Because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.